Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
The man who killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot? What? It's like a documentary channel wet dream. If they could somehow work in looking through storage and maybe ancient Egyptians and sharks, this would be like the ultimate documentary channel movie. Am I right?
You are right.
Hello, anyway. I'm Richard. With me for spoiler film film conversation, hooray, is Abby.
Hello.
And it's just us today because this was one we lifted off a shelf and went, oh, we should do a little quick podcast. Why not do a little? It was more of an off the cuff episode just because it was like a weird movie and I don't know. It's hard to share a DVD around the world sometimes. Anyway, I guess the reason we're doing this film is just it's all about that title, isn't it? I mean, you can't ignore a title like The Man Who Killed. I mean, it's actually quite hard to say correctly. I always get it wrong. But it's The Man Who Killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot. Not just any Bigfoots. And he did them in that order. It was Hitler and then Bigfoot. It's not that soon after each other. It's not like one evening's work. I'm very tempted to say shoot sometimes because he does shoot Hitler. And he shoots Bigfoot, but there's more to it, I suppose. So it's killed. Apparently, there's this man. He killed Hitler. Now, I thought that was Hitler, but turns out Hitler didn't kill Hitler. And if Hitler had killed Hitler, he'd have had to have killed the Bigfoot in order for him to make sense of this title. But it's such a fucking weird film title, isn't it? It promises so much. And we're going to discuss whether it delivers on those promises. But Abby, can you tell us who made The Man Who Killed Bigfoot and then. No, said it wrong, see? It's that easy. The man who killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot.
Okay, The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot is from 2018. It was written and directed by Robert D. Kosowski, is what I'm going with, and stars Sam Elliott, Aidan Turner, Caitlin Fitzgerald, Ron Livingston, Shawn Bridges, Larry Miller, and Mark Steiger, is what I'm going with. And it's about a legendary American war veteran who is recruited to hunt a mythical creature.
Yeah, pretty weird. I mean, I don't know about you, Abby, but I am a big fan of Bigfoot. Not a fan of Hitler. I'm a fan of documentaries and things about Hitler. It's a fascinating time in history that we're sometimes in danger of repeating. But I mean, Bigfoot, that's like pretty much any film that's about Bigfoot or I'm just if you say Bigfoot, I'm like, yes, please. A lot of the stuff out there, especially Bigfoot films, are a bit crap. They tend to be quite cheap B movie fodder because, I don't know, for some reason people don't take Bigfoot stories seriously enough. But I always like a Bigfoot film. I wouldn't say this is the weirdest title with Bigfoot in it I've ever heard. We do have a copy of the comedy film The Sasquatch Dumpling Gang, or at least that's the British name for the film. So that's the probably the. I mean, there might be others that are weirder titles with Bigfoot in, but this is a pretty stonking great title. And we just spotted it, you and I, Abby, in a second-hand DVD store, and we're like, "Oh yes, please!" And then we looked at it a bit more, and we're like,
No, didn't I spot it? I immediately passed it to you, and you purchased it. Isn't that how that worked?
"Yeah, we ascertained that Sam Elliott was in it, and we're like, oh, I like him, he's good." And yeah, that's kind of, this film knows it's banking on the title. So, Abby, are you a Bigfoot fanatic? I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say I believe in them, but I love it as a myth. So, are you like a Bigfoot fan? Are you a Hitler fan?
Well, obviously, I like you, and you're not that many steps away from Bigfoot, I'd say.
Oh,
So,
smelly, hairy urchin who lives in the woods with big feet.
you live in a house.
Oh, yeah, well, thanks.
Yeah, I like a cryptid as much as the next person, and then Hitler, not so much, but that goes without saying.
Yeah. But, I like.
Actually, it goes with saying Hitler was bad.
It
Okay,
doesn't.
everyone.
That's correct. The key thing is you could be a fan of Bigfoot, and a fan of seeing Hitler being killed. I mean, you know, there's stories that have depicted that, both truthful ones and mad ones. So you could be a fan of Hitler being killed. The odd gambit, really, is thinking that you want to see Bigfoot killed. You should, if you've grown up watching, like, Harry and the Hendersons or something, be vaguely sympathetic to at least trying to bag a Bigfoot alive, you know. So it's, I mean, some people want to hunt Bigfoots for trophies or something, or,
There was also a, like, Bigfoot myth in Pottersville that we've seen recently as well.
Oh God, that was another wacky Bigfoot story. It's one of those, again, a lot of these Bigfoot films, they promise a lot, and then they deliver shoddy.
Well, in this one, they had to sort of not demonize Bigfoot per se, but they had to say that he was diseased in order for it to be okay that he gets killed.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's, you wouldn't call the film The Man Who Killed Hitler and also stopped the world from getting the plague, which was being carried by a Bigfoot. Then you just, it's too long and we're too long-winded.
Mm-hmm.
The Man Who Really Killed Hitler and The Man Who Saved the World from a Plague that was being carried by a Bigfoot, the movie.
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
Anyway, the reason to watch this was the title. So we sat down, we watched it, and now we're here to sort of tell you about it a bit and, you know, shoot the breeze as well as Hitler. Well, we're not going to shoot Hitler. We're going to talk about the... anyway, we're going to talk about the film. Right, so, yeah, I mean, it's obviously going to be a piece of fiction because it's about a man shooting Hitler that wasn't Adolf Hitler himself. I mean, there are conspiracy theories that would have you believe Hitler got away, faked his death. I mean, this film supposes not the theory that he had one of his, not impersonator, like stand-ins, someone who looked like him was buried, or and then he ran off to the Alps or something. You know what I mean? This the usual theory is that Hitler didn't die in, like, Berlin, you know, and got cremated outside his bunker or whatever, that he got away and lived into old age and, you know, had all, there's all kinds of crazy Hitler theories, but this one is he was killed and then he was just replaced by some lookalike, and, you know, I guess the nationalists continued doing their stuff, you know, with the figurehead in place. So I don't know, like, it's a bit weird. It didn't spend a whole lot of time justifying it, and the film wants you to take it seriously. That's the first thing that's odd, I would say, for a story about rewriting history and having a mythical beast in it. It wants you very much to believe the story and find it all very plausible, which I found odd.
That's the thing. There's revisionist history and then there's just going insane. One of the things about this movie, I would say, is that for something that is fairly detached from reality, it didn't actually go that fantastical or weird. I would rather they had pushed it further than they did.
Yeah.
I would also perhaps describe this as supernatural realism, which I'm not sure I'm down with.
Is this like that magical realism thing that's now apparently a genre?
Yeah.
Isn't it just, you know, a subcategory of fantasy, though, like magical realism and stuff, you know, like what makes, like, just, oh, it's magical and fantastical, but don't worry, we've made it as boring as possible. It's basically a kitchen sink drama, but someone can move pennies with their mind. Like, what are we talking about? How's that a genre of anything? Realism, but not realism.
The only reason I'm bringing it up is because it's indicative of the tone, which is something I want to get across to listener. Hello, listener. That it's, this film is not in any way wacky, which the title would perhaps suggest that it is.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of suggesting something more akin to what Tarantino did with Inglourious Basterds.
Hmm.
You know, you expect it to be a fun, possibly cathartic, or at least, I think the way it was packaged, even in the trailers that I saw post the film, it kind of shows Sam Elliott to be like a fucking Jason Bourne old man, where he can just fucking take everyone down with his badass martial arts skills or something. Not even martial arts. He just disarms people and fucking, you know, takes care of business. He's like an elite soldier. And he is an elite soldier as a young man. And then in retirement, he's retained his skills. So, and then you're like, oh, fuck, that sounds cool, right? Like, just Sam Elliott going through some kind of mad adventure fighting, you know, Nazis and possibly woodland creatures or something, like, to get to his targets. I mean, come on, be that, you bastard. Don't have, like, like, we will talk about the film in more detail, but you do just sit, you sit through scenes in barbershops where people are just chatting and you're going, killed Bigfoot. Awesome.
That's the other thing about this. So little time is given to the time where he kills Hitler or the time that he kills Bigfoot.
Tiny amount
of time.
Hitler was quite good. They have two little kind of flashback segments where the mission to kill Hitler goes down. Mm. And I thought they were quite good. The thing with this film is it's not like usual like B-movie rubbish. It's actually like a really beautifully shot film. And it's got some great tension in the slower moments. You know, it's got lovely cinematography, some well-thought-out shots, slow, intriguing playing out of scenes. If it wasn't going to be about killing Hitler and Bigfoot, I'd be like, oh, this is cool. It's kind of amusing and intriguing, and it's like a slow burn. It's more about sort of a depressed old man. And you know, you don't want to watch a film about an old man regretting his life and thinking of how he couldn't propose to his girlfriend. You fucking want a man with a machete in the jungle or the woods just fucking jumping out the tree, hacking away at Bigfoot, and then they, you know, you want madness. And there is some. It does have Hitler death and mm-hmm. Bigfoot fights and stuff, but quite a lot of I can't quite propose to my girlfriend in the nice restaurant.
At least there's a lot of one man and his dog, what's in my shoe? What's in the box, which we never find out, and that's infuriating.
I mean, when you spoil what's going to happen in your movie with your title, you can't have the mystery of what's in the box and then not resolve it and make a big point of it as well. So there's a lot of things this film started to annoy me about. But early on in the film, you're intrigued, it's interesting, and I will say, I did think it was very well directed. You know.
Oh, it's beautiful. But it's just wanted to be a romantic drama, a supernatural thriller, and a war movie all at the same time. And you can't be those three things.
It's not even that you can't. It's that it's that you shouldn't if, you know, if like you. I think that, you know, what's interesting about the story is it's about some really compelling ideas, but executing them in a sort of, like, you're what's the phrase? You're missing the, you're burying the lead, aren't you, really?
Mm.
And the headline is there, and then the article is like, all right, yeah. Oh, right, finally getting to it. Oh, we're past that. Like, it's like, they're bullet points in the story, the main title. Anyway, in a way, I mean, I don't want to jump to metaphors, but it's kind of like a BuzzFeed article of a movie where, oh, you haven't got much substance here. It's mainly just filler rubbish. No, that's not true. That's way out of line. Let's go through the film. Maybe we'll figure out our feelings more precisely as we unpack what happened more specifically, right?
Mm.
So where did we start? Where did the movie intro us?
They did the old man, young man intercutting early on so that we established that it's the same person. And some of that stuff was quite compelling. When he was infiltrating and using his gadget gun.
What is Sam Elliott's character's name? I guess it's played by two people. Sam Elliott being the elderly version. And then I don't know the actor who was...
Calvin Barr. The other one was Aidan Turner, who is a British actor.
Yeah.
And is, I think he... Did he... Is he Poldark?
Is he Poldark? Oh, I don't know. I don't watch that. It's too... Well, let's not review that, having not seen it. Not for me.
Yeah, Poldark.
All right, so he's had a haircut to look like he's from the 1930s or 40s.
Mm.
And, well, you know, to look like someone passing himself off as a Nazi. So, yeah, Calvin Barr is, as an old man, single, possibly widowed, we don't really know, but he lives alone with his Labrador, who is beautiful. Oh, Abby, you love Labradors. Mm.
You love Labrador. And that one was a particularly good boy.
It was a good boy. He lives. You know, if you're a fan of dogs surviving movies, it doesn't die in this film, which is a surprise. I suppose the other dog... He has a dog in both, doesn't he? Young Calvin has a bloodhound? Is that what that was called?
No, I think it was an Alsatian.
Alsatian. You're right. It was an Alsatian. I'm fucking terrible at dogs. I could have pictured it and I just said the wrong one. Yeah, he has an Alsatian. That dog will be dead because that was set in the 1940s, so...
Yeah, but that one will have lived out its life.
We assume. Is it a Nazi sympathetic dog though? Because it thought its master was a Nazi, and didn't make any complaints.
It depends. It doesn't necessarily know what they're up to. If all it does is sniff stuff out in fields, it wouldn't know.
You're right, Abby. Dogs might not know about the politics of people, but it might have started off as a Polish resistance dog who's trained in counter-espionage and therefore is equally undercover as a German sniffer dog, you know, so...
Mm-hmm.
But both young and old Calvin have dogs, partly for the mission, I think, in World War Four, I was going to say, in World War Two. But yeah, we get a lot of young Calvin travelling, and some of that's beautiful. He's, like, getting on trains and wandering through fields and just basically... Travelling. Actually, it's the first major contentious point involved this early setup.
Mm. There's two, old and young Calvin, both have an important bit quite close together. Old Calvin almost has his car jacked, and young Calvin experiences a gypsy shaving curse.
Yeah, this is what that's what I was going to talk about. Not so much the car accident comes, and it, you know, it's an interesting scene, but the thing that really rubbed me up the wrong way is this whole movie, really the whole life of Calvin, went the way it did because he's had a gypsy shaving curse. Like, for some reason he's got, like, he's traveling initially through the wilderness in the 40s or whatever, and he's got a beard, young Calvin, and then he's with some, I think they're like gypsy resistance or Polish or something. I think the idea is they're like European resistance people in a camp. And then one slightly, I guess he looks a bit thuggish, just a sort of bald middle-aged bloke, is talking to him and giving him a shave. Not because he's, because he has to for the mission, right? To pass as like he can't just be a scruff Nazi. He has to be like a clean-shaven, you know, Aryan-looking dude.
Mm.
So he has to have a shave. So he gives him a wet shave with a cutthroat razor. And those scenes are done to death in films where you think, could someone slit his throat and betray him? And you go, well, no, because he's an old man. But so no tension necessarily. But the gypsy
that
guy...
That hadn't occurred to me, actually, that there's no tension in the young stuff because we see him as an old man. He's obviously going to be fine, ultimately. Not to say that he's going to get scot-free.
Yeah, and I suppose there is tension and you don't know how... I mean, you know he kills Hitler. Because, I don't know, the film could swerve you. But there's not a lot of tension, like they try and do with... I don't know why movies love a wet shave with a bit of, could they kill me business. But it's mainly about some fucking guy rambling on about... Like, was it his grandmother or something? Basically, there's some old wives' tale about when you have this shave, if you get cut, it means your mission or whatever you're going to do will go well and you live. But if I don't cut you, the shave is perfect, you're doomed and cursed, but it will succeed. But if I can't... If you get cut, the mission goes good. If you get a perfect shave, you're going to die or something. And then if one of you deliberately gets cut, so if you move and get cut on purpose, or the person shaving you cuts you on purpose, you're fucking with the god or gypsy cursiness. And that also affects the thing. So it's the tension is, I guess, whether he's going to have a clean shave or not. Which, I mean, what the fuck are we doing, guys? It's about killing Hitler and a Bigfoot. Come on, guys. We don't need the tension of whether will a shave go well. But so he has the shave in this tent. This guy explains this bollocks. And if I was him, I'd just be like, oh, shut the fuck up, mate. Just shave me, for Christ's sake. Why are you even bringing the curse element in? Why don't you just not mention it and talk about it? What the fuck are you doing? I don't need your help, like, at all. I'll shave, you know? Don't know why he does that. But, crucially, the shave goes well. And they can't... They have to... Deliberately, like, he kind of, oh dear, the mission's going to go well, but you won't survive it. So I'm going to deliberately cut you now, so that I save your life, but still technically cursed. Am I getting that right?
They'll succeed, but they're cursed, yeah.
Because he's forcing a slight cut. Oh, it's just like, whoa, what are we talking about? Shaving curses. What? Sorry, what is happening?
That's the thing. I think it was more the, like, there was always this threat of violence, but you know he's not going to die. And it's not like old man is walking around with a big scar across his neck either or anything like that to suggest that there was even...
Yeah, you put Sam Elliott in, like, a neckerchief and you can't... Then, so you're not sure if the Polish bloke cuts his throat or if the mission... Like, he kills Hitler, but, like, he's... wounded in some way, and you know, I don't know what the film isn't necessarily going for. That I think it's going more for, like, a slow burn, tension filled story of an old man who has a past and is once again picking up arms again now that his country needs him or something. Anyway, we get this stupid curse, and he's doomed. So he knows he's going into this mission that it'll A, succeed, but B, I don't know, won't work out. But he might not believe in gypsy shaving curses, so, I don't know, it might be in the back of his mind, but, I don't know, shrug it off. Anyway, he walks past things like a bunch of Jewish people going to the trains that they obviously get taken to the concentration camps on and things, and so he sort of, we have a little... brief road movie with the dog, and he arrives at some kind of army HQ, isn't it? And then I would say the best or my favourite part of the film happens, which is basically him in full, like, SS uniform.
What? Are you getting onto Gadget Gun?
Well, kind of.
Because there's old man stuff between...
Oh, no, I wasn't going to jump straight
to that. The Gypsy Saving Curse and Gadget Gun.
Well, I was going to talk about it, but yeah, go on. What does the old man do? Have a fucking sausage and give it to his dog? What happens?
I think that does happen, but I didn't make a note. But then there's the hatch. There's the bit where he's in the hat shop and he meets the girl. And young guy, hat shop. Old guy, he hands in a winning scratch card to the shop it came from and doesn't claim the money.
Well, those are two separate issues. I mean, one, I mean, there's nothing wrong with a bloke working as a milliner for ladies' hats. It just seemed like he, as a young man, he worked as a haberdasher or something and met the love of his life. Only not the love of his life, the love of his early years, and then the woman he pines for but does nothing about the rest of his life. So the other thing you mentioned was that he... I guess it's character building, so he's such an honest fucking cunt that you find a scratch card in a shop. I mean, A, no one ever scratches a scratch card and doesn't realise they've won. Literally, all they're looking at the scratch card is, have I won money? So I don't know how that happens. But they find a scratch card that's won on the floor, and he just gives it to the clerk and is like, no, it's if anyone comes back for it and so forth. And they won't, because they thought it was a loser scratch card. And the clerk's like, oh, for your honesty, he tries to give him something for his dog or something. And then he's like, no, I'll pay for it. He's such a fucking Boy Scout, isn't he?
Yes, it's absolutely infuriating.
I mean, he doesn't live, does he? He's in his little old man house with his chintzy house, furniture and old man stuff. And he's just, he walks his dog, and he is an honest John, and he's depressed about it because he's a fucking schmo.
It made him less sympathetic.
Like, where would this go? If he kept the scratch card and got the money, would he, I don't know, like, Is it dishonest? I don't know. Like, who cares? It's not the man who killed Hitler won the lottery and then killed Bigfoot. Like, you know. Yeah, so I think it's just character development and building, sort of showing his character, I guess. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know, it's just whatever. But we, yeah, it's not just straight up, well, here's the Hitler mission. It cuts between old man stuff, establishing the guy having a brother and things. His brother's a barber, but it's like, I know the guy, I've seen him in loads of stuff, but in this he's become at an age where he's old and looks like a burns victim or something, this guy. Do you know the actor's name?
Larry Miller. I don't want to be too harsh on him in case he's got like an illness that I don't know about.
Didn't look well.
Yeah, he did not. Let's put it that way. He did not look well.
Yeah, he's always been, you know, he's always looked older. Like, you know, he's in a lot in recent years, but now he's really crossed the line into fucking hell. You're right, mate. But yeah, he's his younger brother, although he doesn't look much younger than Sam Elliott. He's a barber, and they have, you know, the odd conversation about fishing and how are you and stuff. It's all just like old man stuff, isn't it? Just all right, yeah. So okay. He's in retirement, that's fine. It's in a contrast with his early soldiering career, I suppose. So anyway, back to the cool bit. That's actually good, right?
Mm-hmm.
He infiltrates this building. Well, he walks into this building, infiltrates. He's wearing a SS trench coat and uniform and all this, and he has to, I guess, act slightly entitled and stuff. But basically, there's a Nazi receptionist who's sort of looking him up suspiciously, and they go through all like the protocol, and he hands in his actual like weapons and things, and he's kind of reluctant to give a salute, like he gives a kind of half-assed Hitler salute initially, and then, you know, they go, it's like a nice like you can feel that there's a tension when he get away with this thing, so it's got a nice sort of at any point he could be caught out, or it could, you know, because there's no reason the mission happens straight away and goes successful.
No.
The tension genuinely does build, and it's quite good. It's, like, nicely builds up. And I quite like he hands all over his guns and IDs and things, and then he gives a proper salute and kind of throws the guy off because he's not ready for the salute then. He's like, oh, shit, yeah, Hail Hitler and all that. And he pops up the stairs. There's a little bit with the sniffing the beverage. Like he has a little metal canteen that gets checked and things, doesn't he? And what is it? It's basically the golden gun from The Man with the Golden Gun, right? But did slightly different bits, is it?
Yeah, it's just a sort of, he MacGyvers a weapon out of various things he's got on him, which I liked.
What was it, though? Like a canteen? I don't know, is it like a lighter or something?
A pen?
I don't know if I'm remembering the Golden Gun or not. It's like, there's definitely... Okay, so the Golden Gun doesn't have a canteen thingy. But it's basically the... I don't know, not the nozzle, that's not the right word. I don't know about guns. And I don't know about guns made of various things from Ryman's. But he's got a load of knickknacks he assembles into a gun, which has...
You meant barrel.
Barrel. Yeah, the barrel of the gun is a, you know, drinking canteen thing. But anyway, it's a slightly weird-looking gun that he assembles, and then has he got it like tucked in a newspaper or something? I don't know. I could just be remembering every film ever that smuggles a gun in. But he basically hands over a document to Hitler. Hitler opens a Uncle Sam propaganda poster and is like, "Merit? No, not merit. That'd be French. Scheisen."
He was mostly confused. But justifiably so, as well. It's like, why have you given me this? Oh, I am shot.
Oh, I am shot. exclamation mark, question mark. Ah, and then he's dead. Yeah, so Hitler's shot at his desk. And then I guess he just pops on out of there, walks away, goes with his dog back, you know, into the rest of Europe, and mission accomplished. Like, it did work. It was like a nice... cool little, it's the bit in the title, he killed Hitler, hooray, I'm enjoying myself. And then obviously you're kind of wondering, okay, so where do we go from here? Is this the history that everyone remembers? Does everyone remember all that time when? Or obviously, I think the way you kind of expect the film to be like, well, obviously that's not how it went down. And this film is based in reality sort of thing. So you do expect a conspiracy theory. It does get explained.
That's the thing. It gets explained by Sam Elliott, where he scolds the audience. Yes, I killed him, but then the Nazis were horrible anyway, because Nazis are Nazis. And just sort of feel like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, like the CIA and the Canadian version of the CIA come to his house later on and try and recruit him. And they hash out the... I heard some rumours about a guy who was like... I think it's quite later in the film, but essentially, like, the CIA guy who is in Band of Brothers, that's the only thing I can remember him from.
It's Ron Livingston.
Oh, and he was in Lucky, which we did on the podcast.
It's a similar role.
Well, he wasn't a little... He was a little bitch in both of them, wasn't he? Yeah.
But he was all... My granddad used to tell me stories about a guy who... And then Sam Neill again scolds. Sam Neill's like, I'm not going to be what you think I am. I'm going to be a grumpy old man. Grumpy, grumpy grumps.
Yeah, and it gets as far as stuff like, oh, I don't know what I believed that my grandfather used to tell me these stories that were, you know, mental and outlandish, but I don't know, did you, I mean, maybe you didn't pull a fucking sword out of a stone, but maybe you did something better, and you go, fuck off, what are you saying, like, being King Arthur and pulling out Excalibur from a stone is, like, you know, not as good as killing Hitler in a mission. There's, I mean, anyone, like, people did actually try and kill Hitler. Like, he nearly got killed by Tom Cruise, didn't he, in that tent that one time with Valkyrie? Like, killing Hitler is difficult and didn't happen, but, you know, Hitler succeeded. But, like, it's, like, being King Arthur... would be kind of more insane, you know. So he sort of...
That was the thing. It was... You didn't really... You sort of missed a link.
Oh, there,
where it's... The guy was describing it as if the person who did... The person who did this was so heroic that he was, like... He was like a legendary figure like King Arthur.
Yeah, he's fucking Batman. There was this army man Batman. Maybe the rumours are true and all this. And, you know, at this stage, we know... that Sam Elliott as this old guy can still fucking hand out an ass beating. Like, essentially, he's trying to mind his own business. He basically walks his dog, goes to bars. I think he sits in a bar for a while and just says, "Ah, oh, shit, I'm in a shit bar. Yo, bartender, this is a shit bar. Like, it's shit being here." And the bartender's like, "Oh.
Oh, well.
Oh, thanks, bud. It's like, oh, I don't mean it like that.
I'm going to add, like, $20 to your bar tab."
Yeah, fuck you, buddy.
Fuck you, buddy.
No, but, like, he's, you know, he's like, a mopey old man, and then he's walking home. He's got a stone in his shoe. That's crucial that he's got this stone. This sort of, it's like the gypsy curse symbolised in a little thing that he can't get rid of in his shoe. And so he gets, like, some muggers. Not I would have preferred it if they were kind of lame muggers, but they're, like, pretty tough. Probably too old to be mugging people, muggers. Like, muggers should really. It's a 16 to 30 year old game, really, isn't it?
Are you saying it's a young man's game, mate?
It's a young man's game, isn't it? You should be able to do bigger, more impressive crimes. I don't know. It's not just desperate. It's not desperate junkies. It's three, like, regular looking blokes all trying to mug Sam Elliott. And they're kind of high school bullyish in their approach, because they're like, nicking his wallet and his... They want his wallet and they want his car keys to steal his car. And then Sam Elliott's kind of fine with it, but then he tries to take out the picture of his old sweetheart. And the guy sees this, and then because he's fucking high school bully number two, he, like, puts a cigarette out in the picture of this woman. And that's kind of, like, the last straw, I guess, for Sam Elliott. And he's, you know, he fucking... How would you... I mean, he whoops their asses completely, entirely... Smish smashes them, and, like, you know, it's what was it most like? I think it's a little Jason Bourne-ish.
They did a good job of keeping it old man pace. I'll give them that. Where it was very, oh, I've managed to do this, but, oh, I'd really much rather have not have, oh, my back, oh, my arm.
Yeah, but he basically, you know, breaks all their wrists and things and, like, takes them all down. And he Batmans the fuck out of them, and they didn't see it coming. And then he basically drives off. And I'm kind of, again, I'm more disapproving of this film, promoting drunk driving. This old man, he's had too many drinks, and he's trying to drive home.
Naughty.
Call a taxi, mate. I mean, in a way, the muggers would have done you a favour, wouldn't they, if you'd have not driven home? But, you know, he gets home safe like a prick. But yeah, like, so that was cool, right? It was, we've had an assassination of Hitler, tension-filled, gadgety, and then we've had this kind of, you know, fucking Taken shit going on. It's still in the good books thus far, I would say.
And then it just the pace. Oh, the pace.
Yeah.
They spend a whole lot of time at a dinner.
Well, that's...
Failing to propose.
So, you know, the other predominant story of Calvin Barr's life seems to be that he had this girlfriend that he met in a fucking hat shop or something. And, you know, it's your classic wartime girlfriend, I'm going to war, you know, we should get married, or I'm back from war, we should get married. But he's taking out for a nice dinner, it's all very dull and very sweet and romantic. They're having a meal, drinking some booze, having a nice time. But various obnoxious couples come up and spoil things just as he's getting all nervous and ready to propose with his ring. He's like, oh, hi, fella, and we've come to have a stupid conversation at your table. Oh, have you? Hello. You know. And I think that happens a few times, doesn't it, this date they go on.
Yeah, he's never proactive about it. He's always really passively trying to propose. Whereas if he'd actually just actively tried to propose once, he would have succeeded.
Yeah, but you see, the gypsy shaving curse, isn't it? That's what that was all about. You're going to survive, but be cursed to be a bit feckless and nervous around women. One woman once, never again. I don't know, we spent a long time on this fucking dinner date thing, and you're going, like, right, yeah, well, it is awkward, isn't it? It is awkward when people interrupt you when you're having a nice conversation, you're trying to build up to something, and you're like, fucking hell, is this a romantic comedy? What is happening? Like,
we've had Hitler. We are waiting for Bigfoot.
Unless he's going to be one of the fucking waiters and he doesn't tip enough and they have a fight in the fucking restaurant. Why are we here? And quite frankly, that would have been a better idea than the thing we got later. But yeah, so it's there's a lot of... She becomes a teacher, doesn't she? And he gets an offer to be in the CIA or something?
Yeah.
He's grown his moustache in now that he's back from the war. Or he's about to. No, that is after he fails to propose one last time. Like, he's walking down the street with her, and it's night time, and he gets down on one knee, and she sort of is walking away, and she says something. Like, he kind of basically she just turns him down. I can't quite remember what her rationale is. Do you remember?
Oh no, well, it's because he says, like, I'm leaving again, so I'm not going to be able to see you for a while, and she doesn't want to say goodbye because it's going to get upsetting, so she's just going to keep walking, and then he decides that's the best time to propose when she's leaving.
I mean, you know, it can't be easy to marry a military man or a fucking spy or whatever he is, but I mean, they could have made it work. He could have proposed when he got back. I mean, the stupid thing as well is, I mean, I don't know what the gypsy curse does, but for whatever reason, she sends him letters and correspondence, which he then, while he's busy working, I mean, he's back at home or whatever, but he's got some other job that keeps him away from home, and he gets all these letters, and he just puts them all in like a fucking hat box and pop them in a bin, having not read them, I think. And you go, okay, why not?
Yeah, but why, bro? Why?
I mean, you don't even know, they could be quite miserable letters, or she could have said, oh, I've become a lesbian, but I'm keeping it secret from my parents. There could have been anything in those letters.
No, he did read them.
Oh, he did?
But then he didn't answer them.
Because nervous or something. Or I can't give you... But it wasn't like... What compelling reason did he have to be a spy or fight for his country or whatever? I guess he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd done something, I guess he seemed regretful. He said, he sounded like earlier on, like when he was recalling stories, that he was reluctant to, he didn't want to kill Hitler. I mean, he deserved it, it was a long time coming and all that. But he didn't want to kill people, he wasn't that kind of person. But it's not like it changed him and all he could do to stave off his demons was keep working. I don't feel like we got a proper reason for why stoic Alvin was like dedicated to his country and his work. That's what I'm cut out for and stuff seemed to be the only thing they put out there.
They made sort of like subtle allusion to stuff like post-traumatic stress and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you're right. But there are certain times when you need something to be a little bit more explicit. And it really would have helped this to have had a better idea of what was making him tick at any given point.
Yeah. I mean, come back home, marry the school teacher, become like a scoutmaster or something. Fucking, I don't know. Like, there's no reason you have to do what you're doing. It's not like you were compelled. It's not like the only way to keep the secret of something or other. Like, if you'd killed Hitler and if it, you know, if the secret got out or something, like, there had to be a reason for him to keep working beyond,
Because another thing that could have happened is that by virtue of being in the Secret Service, he couldn't be truthful with her about a lot of things. And he might not have wanted secrets from her. But again, that's just me sort of rationalising it on my own.
Yeah, like, oh, if I marry you and settle down, what if some old Nazis send people to assassinate her because to get to me, to get revenge on Hitler or something? And no. What if Bigfoot realises I have a wife and comes out of the hills and gets her? So I don't know. He's afraid to love, I suppose. So the next important landmark in the man's life and career, much later on, you know, after presumably retiring and being boring and going fishing with his brother and stuff, he's sitting around in his house and he gets like, actually one of the things we didn't mention, I think we get like a flashback to when him and his brother were little kids.
And a little tiny dinosaur.
Yeah, there's a tiny dinosaur. Not a real dinosaur. That would have, again, that should have been in the title. The man who killed Hitler had a tiny dinosaur and killed the Bigfoot. But, like, what was the story with his little brother gave him a little dinosaur for some fucking reason?
That was like a good luck charm. That was one of the most rational things in it, but it was also completely irrelevant.
Well, it was quite rational to give someone a dinosaur.
For a kid to give his brother something to keep him safe while he was at war, that makes sense.
Yeah, I see. But then, I guess that's the seeds planted. I guess it's just a prop for later on. So, you're living your old man life, staring at a picture of the wilderness and sitting there. He has this box he keeps looking at and considering. I assumed it had like a gun and he was considering killing himself. Just because he stops taking his medicine and things, doesn't he?
Mm.
So that's squishing his pills and then he throws them away. So it seems like he's depressed for he's sad and stuff. And, well, you know.
It was just the way you said it.
The film doesn't really care. He's got a box and he's sad and regrets. So at some point he gets like a knock on the door from a couple of dudes who somehow didn't, they know, they saw that he beat up some muggers and they're aware that he's like a tough cookie still. And this is a silly film concept taking itself very seriously. And at this point, there's basically a hell of a lot of convenient factors and justifying that this film tries to do at this point. It's basically, oh, we need you to kill Bigfoot because Bigfoot is a plague-carrying victim. Like, Bigfoot isn't dying of the plague. He's immune to the plague. But somehow, Bigfoot has got the plague or a plague-like virus, and he's been killing, and it's been infecting other animals in the radius of the wilderness in, like, Canada or wherever he's been, that Bigfoot lives. I mean, first of all, surprise, Bigfoot's real. Surprise number two, Bigfoot has the plague and is some kind of Bigfoot zombie.
No, he's a carrier, but he is not dying.
Well, he didn't look well.
That's true. I think he may have been dying, but he was dying very, very, very slowly and not before he had infected everything else.
So all the other living things, except birds, because birds would kill us all. Like, not birds. Literally says, well, birds, because we remembered birds exist, and if birds had got the plague, we'd all be wiped out. We couldn't stop it. Bird flu would just murder everyone. So birds, conveniently, only mammals, I guess. Hopefully it's not fish, I don't know. Have been dying in a big radius in the wilderness in Canada, so... We need to stop Bigfoot. We can't just bomb him like you think. What, we don't want to nuke the forest. We can't send in army men because they'll get the plague and stuff. We need you.
He is one of two people who are immune. And the other one's dead.
It's a very rare... There's rare occurrences of people being immune to this particular virus. For some reason, they know that Sam Elliott's character... is immune to the virus. It's very rare. And luckily, even though he's an old man and he's probably a bit past it, luckily this super fucking soldier legend, conveniently, he can Rambo his way through the forest and kill Bigfoot if he wants to. If he's agreeable, luckily you have immunity from the disease. Or it could have been that you're dying of cancer and you could have... I would have preferred for the old guy to be dying, have some terminal case or something. And they could they could be asking him to give up life. And he'd be like, oh, that's like, okay, he's depressed anyway. I think that's a more compelling reason, is if he's already going to die anyway, he's the only person because he's a terminally ill ex-super soldier. Or I don't know. So yeah, Bigfoot has the plague. He's killing loads of mammals, not birds. Crucially not birds or, I don't know, pollen. It doesn't get passed through bacteria or who knows. But it's like... Mammals are dying. There's a big. It's all been cordoned off, and there's a ring of fire. And Bigfoot needs hunting down and killing, because we can't. I guess you can't like euthanize Bigfoot in a conventional way. A, you have to fight him. B, you have to kill him. And conveniently, you don't have this. You're immune to the disease. And conveniently, even though you're old, you've still got your amazing fucking Jason Bourne powers. So will you please go into the wilderness? And kill Bigfoot. That's right, isn't it? That's the justification, is you conveniently have all these factors that mean you're the only man for the job.
Yes.
And then Sam Elliott's like, no thanks. I'll let the world die. Sorry.
Then he goes and has a chat on the bench with his brother. And his brother's all, well, you know, I'll support you whatever you do.
Even if you doom us all, I'll support you while I'm dying of the plague that we've all got because you wouldn't go. Yeah, he is very like, oh, I'm nice. But it's weird, the dining room table chat before that was just, I found it really annoying. All the like justification, but the sort of, we'll all talk in euphemisms about there was a man. And then the like, Canadian CIA type guy is sitting there, he's like a little mustachioed, tanned guy or whatever, and he's there, he's like French Canadian or whatever, and he's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, there was a man who killed a certain other Schmadolf Schmittler type person, and there was a legendary story. Like, it's very, they're not really beating around the bush and talking about some certain legendary figure that, you know. And the other guy's like, oh, I don't know,
I can't get over it. Schmadolf Schmittler.
It was, may as well have been. It may as well have said that, because it was like, surely this other guy is privy to the information. Why are we beating around the bush? If he's special super agent.
The other guy is scientist.
Oh, he's a scientist.
Yeah.
He can know about Bigfoot existing and having the plague, but he can't know that Hitler was assassinated, but then the Nazi party put someone else in his place that looked like him and acted like him. And appeared, like, it sort of takes all the blame off of Hitler, like, and says, oh, well, all the Nazis were bad. And, I mean, fair enough, Hitler wasn't the only Jew-hating maniac, but it sort of says, oh, well, Hitler was replaceable. You go, what was he? I don't know, he would have been replaced, but by a different person in the Third Reich. He wouldn't have been Hitler replaced by another man who can act and behave like Hitler.
Hmm.
But then that man shot themselves in a bunker in Berlin. And you go, did he? Okay. But I just thought the whole scene around the dining room table justifying all this was fucking irritating.
Ron Livingston did try his absolute best to not make it sound twee, but it was just twee. But it's like my granddad used to tell me about this guy, and then Sam Elliott just being all, you think these are fairy stories, this was real, yes, I did that, and then I lived with it the rest of my life. By the years, bastard.
Yeah, and then, like you said, oh, it's a little bit of a, I'll support you, whatever, it's fine, you do whatever you want, bud. From his brother, he's like, oh, fine, we'll go fishing or something. And so Sam Elliott's like, even though I said no, I'm going to do it now. So it's just fucking, oh, don't, I'm a grumpy old man. Don't just give me a briefing and stuff. Let's fucking crack on. Oh, yeah, Ring of Fire. Like, they're all in hazmat suits. They're quite good, large, weird-coloured hazmat suits. There's a whole fucking facility of scientists all, you know, setting up the mission, basically. There's a wall of guns. That's always important. And you're like, oh, we're back on. Now we're talking.
Oh, that was fun. Wait, what? I just looked at Ron Livingston's character's name, and his character's name is Flag Pin.
Yeah, that's weird. Did that come up? Flag Pin? It just sounds like a crucial part of something.
But no, the only reason I looked it up is because he said that the supply of guns available at the local sheriff's office or something was inadequate, so he brought some of his own supply, and it was just loads.
I mean, anyway, you go, oh my god, big wall of guns. Okay, it's stupid, but the scientists are in hazmat suits, there's a big ring of fire, they got Bigfoot penned in a large location, they're giving him enough information to go. I don't know if they give him, like, here's some scat we found and some, like, fluff on a branch we found, so we know the Bigfoot's heading south or something. Anyway, it's like, you do the hard bit. You know, killing Hitler is a completely different kettle of fish to killing Bigfoot. One is hunting a mythical beast. The other, like, okay, I don't know which one's harder. One has been done, I guess. People have found and got close to Hitler. But Hitler has a huge entourage of people. He's very, you know, he's hidden but visible. There's a huge number of people coming and toing and froing. He's guarded. He's in obvious locations. You know, it's a secret, but he's a big important figurehead in a country that's at war with the world. The Bigfoot is like a fucking needle in a haystack. A big hairy needle, but it's a big ass fucking haystack. So hunting a mythical beast, one, like, you know, if you ask someone to hunt one particular deer, not just shoot a deer, get a man-sized deer. Sorry, Bigfoot isn't a deer. But hunting a mythical beast is a different fucking thing. We haven't seen him do any hunting, have we? Maybe, did we get any, I mean, you know, any suggestion?
No, I think this is the first time he holds a rifle.
Does he throw a knife at a log or anything? Like, I feel like we're just, I don't know.
Not that I recall.
Well, convenient. Even if he can't hunt, you know, he's got that special blood that makes him immune to whatever, so I guess he's doing it. But this is the thing, you think, oh my god, here we go. He's going to hunt Bigfoot, it's going to be epic. Almost instantly, he finds Bigfoot and gets in a kerfuffle where he shoots Bigfoot successfully in the leg, like breaks his arm and nearly falls down a bit of a cliff or something, and Bigfoot gets away, but it's almost instant. There's no hunting intention at all. One minute he's whistling in the woods, the next minute, oh fuck, he's shooting Bigfoot.
It was literally just, I'm in the woods, I've shot him a bit, I've fallen, broken my finger, I've thrown away my walkie-talkie, see him again, he's pretending to die, then he's lying there long enough for me to cover him, sticks to burn him, he waits until I light the sticks to get up, then there's a fight, throws up all over him, he fights some more, then he's dead.
I see, that is what happened. I don't want to gloss over some of this stuff, because, I mean, some of the bits are, like, really questionable. One, so a few people asking you questions on a walkie-talkie. You've hurt yourself, so you throw the walkie-talkie away. What are you doing? Like, that's insane. Can you just turn it off?
No, they were hassling him.
Oh, and he's a grumpy old man.
Have you killed him yet? No.
I've shot him and avert myself. Okay, so temper throws the walkie-talkie away. And then he has to track Bigfoot. So he basically climbs a big cliff and finds the injured Bigfoot looking everything like a zombie orangutan stretched out to be a bit taller. So it's this pathetic, bony, furry Bigfoot that has a zombie face. And Bigfoot's having a fucking lie down like, oh, bleh, I'm dying. So Sam Elliott's like, oh, I fucking got this, dude. Nailed it. And then, yeah, he's sort of got enough time to put a bunch of sticks, and he's like, well, I'm not letting them have your body. They probably can't because they don't want to spread the virus. So you do probably, I would have thought the mission was to burn him. You know, I mean, I don't know how the plague worked, but, like, or this version of the plague. But, you know, he makes a little Eeyore house around Bigfoot of sticks and is ready to burn him. And he actually, I think he sets him partly on fire. Bigfoot's like, fuck that shit, I ain't burning. And they have a little, argy-bargy fight. You know, you're like, oh my god, Bigfoot is fighting the man and it looks like a shit orangutan with weird arms that it's just like a really bad gangly fight. It's kind of shit.
One of the things about Bigfoot is in most versions, he's big, isn't he?
Bigfoot. Well, his feet are big. We know that. His feet are bigger than men, usually. I think the general consensus on what, if Bigfoot is a thing, it would be an ape man. It would be a large ape man. It would either be a more like a primitive Neanderthal type look, even though they were quite short. But it would be like you're expecting something between ape and man. And this was more orangutan zombie bloke, really, wasn't it? And I'm not saying it wasn't the worst Bigfoot I've ever seen, but it wasn't like an exciting fight. It was sort of, oh shit, what's happening? And it was kind of over before it began. It wasn't so much that it was brutal, but it was disgusting because they have the most cartoony bit where, like you said, he vomits on him. Bigfoot, while in the fight, is like got Sam pinned down and he vomits in his face. Horrible, disgusting plague vomit. I mean, we've established there's skanky deer and dead moose around the forest, so it's a disgusting, murderous vomit in his face. But it's like one of those, like, clearly rigged up to a pipe type. You know, it's not like they got the man in the suit to just stick up on him. They got a stupid vomit projectile tube next to the guy's mouth that they just shot it so it looked like he had an endless supply of vomit. And it was just like, ah, I mean, it is disgusting, but it's more that it looked rubbish as well.
It did look rubbish.
And it was so needless. Like, oh yeah, that's what we needed from a Bigfoot fight. Just Bigfoot vomit in your face. Oh.
Yes, just, there's no... It didn't add anything, because that's not part of the Bigfoot thing. No one was chomping at a bit for, like, say... let me take something for example. With Alien, for example, you're always waiting for the little mini mouth to come out of the big mouth. You are expecting that. It is anticipated.
Yeah.
You don't hear, like, oh, it's a film about Bigfoot. I can't wait for the vomit.
Yeah, the vomit that he defends himself with. Yeah, if it had been like Chupacabra, I would have expected some blood to be sucked or something, like, you know.
A little claw slashy.
Yeah. Maybe. What I expect from Bigfoot, and I don't expect much, maybe he hits you with like a rock or a branch, but then maybe he like drops a massive leg on you like Hulk Hogan because he's Bigfoot.
I was going to say, like, it's going to be more of a, you're fighting a very large, powerful beast.
Yeah.
That, like, it should be more of a, if he hits you, he is going to like fracture your skull.
Yeah, it should be more like akin to fighting a gorilla or something, shouldn't it?
Mm.
He fucking beats the fuck out of you. Like, maybe a big boot, get the gimmick in there, you know. But come on, vomiting, disgusting virus vomit. And he's not going to die from it because he's immune, it's just gross. And he's already got a dicky arm. But, like, do you remember? He dispatches Bigfoot, I guess, again, or properly this time. He burns the Bigfoot.
And then he fakes his own death. Because, of course.
How does he do that?
It is not made clear. There is just a large funeral. Lots of people go, which is nice. You always want a lot of people to come to your funeral.
I want to outlive everyone who'd want to come. yeah, he has a funeral. And crucially, they bury the box with him, you see.
Mmm. And then his brother's fishing, and he just shows up and he's like, hi, I'm alive. Brother's not even surprised. he asks him, oh, what did you do with the box? Oh, I buried it. Oh, sorry, man. Ah, it's fine.
I thought you were dead, in fairness.
No one is surprised that he's alive, yet there is no hint at conspiracy either.
Well, the thing is, he's an old man. You expect that he's allowed to... He's killed Hitler. He saved... Well, he's tried to save... Stop a war. It's pretty good going either way. So he's a hero. He has saved the world from a horrible Bigfoot plague. So he's allowed to die. He's an old man as well. So it's kind of like, oh yeah, well, we end on a sad note where Bigfoot... Because you're killing Bigfoot. Bigfoot, naturally, he can't help having the plague. And he can't help looking like a zombie. Like, it's a baby face. You defeated a baby face to save the world. You're out to die. It's kind of like a noble way to go. You killed a mythical beast that was... You know, it's better to catch the Bigfoot and find out more mysteries about the world and kind of have a King Kong story where, you know, it's not that you want to kill him, it's that, you know, he's a misunderstood... Or whatever. You can do anything with a Bigfoot as a story, but you killed him because you had to, and now you're dead, and because you had the curse as well, the old shaving curse, so you're dead now. Like, but... He's living. And it's not just, oh, he lived. Like, you go, oh, the film's going to end. Him and his brother finally go on a fishing trip together like they talked about. And, like, roll credits. You go, no. What we need now is we need a not very nice dad to bring his son for a haircut and have a little chat with the barber brother. And we're just going to have loads of dialogue there. We're going to talk about a kid's play. Oh, Sam Elliott's going to go to the kid's play even though he's pretending to be dead. So he has to sneak in to watch a boring kid's play. Like, we just carry on. We fucking carry on with the film.
And then somehow, that sorts out the problem because Shoe's cured. That's how you know everything's fine.
The little rock that he has to keep... Oh, I found a rock in my shoe. The rock finally falls out. This sort of mythical rock that he could never find previously.
And now he walks into the sunset with his dog after interring, it's always called, his own grave to get the box. And it's at this point where I deduct points from the dog because it did not dig along.
He digs up the box from his grave and has, like, so what is this? Symbolically, the curse happened, right? He, for no reason, got a curse. Like, basically, some bellend gave him a special shave that affected the outcome of a mission. And because the shave didn't go appropriately, I don't know, the gypsy gods deemed that Hitler would be defeated, but it wouldn't be, like, the full-on victory of the war ending. It was covered up and useless, a waste of time. Then he'd live a life of, like, sadness where he didn't really propose to the woman he wanted to. Worked hard, became an elite fighting military man, and then had to kill a fucking virus-carrying Bigfoot, and then he carried on living. Like, at what point did he what was the get out of the curse? Killing Bigfoot, or realising that you like your nephew? Like, what did he learn?
I don't know. It puts me in mind of... I don't normally sing any praises of the film Independence Day, but Randy Quaid's pilot, who is a proper drunken crop duster at the start, and he cleans himself up and redeems himself at the end by flying into the engine to blow up the mothership.
Yeah, spoilers.
That is, like, that's a proper arc. I don't feel like Calvin actually had an arc.
What was his redemption? How did he didn't do anything wrong to get the curse. It wasn't like, oh, it's fitting because not only did he kill Hitler, but he stole Jewish gold on the way out. Like, he didn't, like, do anything to become cursed. He just got it inflicted on him. And then he behaved stoically. So I guess his main problem as a character was he was a good soldier and a good fighter, and he fought for his country, but he sacrificed his love life and himself. Like, he was selfless, and he didn't, you know, live for himself, and he wasn't bold enough to marry the woman he wanted, and he didn't settle for anyone else, and he sort of obsessively thought about her despite not caring enough to actually go and, you know, be with her. Mm. I guess at some point she would have moved on, but... So he, I guess his flaw was that he clung to this old relationship he couldn't make work. But he didn't get over that at the end and, like, marry a nice old lady or... Like, what did he do? Like, he didn't. He just killed Bigfoot. It had nothing to do with anything.
Like, yeah, I couldn't even tell you what Bigfoot's symbolic of, really.
Also, what was the story where Bigfoot got the plague? Like, what's this? Did the Bigfoot just develop it? Was it just bacteria or a virus that mutated? Like, I don't know if they gloss over it, but so there's another story in there how Bigfoot got the plague and how people found out Bigfoot existed. We went from, oh, like, all these animals are dying in the wilderness. Like, off, like, before the film, animals are dying. There's, like, a whole epidemic where there's... And then people are discovering these animals, but they're not getting the plague, are they? Are they in quarantine and getting, like, are they got a killer? Like,
I think what? I think they were dying.
So people might be dying as well. So they've...
It's only because it's a fairly rural area that the human count is very low.
But they somehow know that Bigfoot is the one who has passing it on. Like, all of this story about Bigfoot is... Like, the very concept of Bigfoot has the plague and it's a problem, that's a story. You don't even need a guy who killed Hitler to tell that story.
What's Bigfoot's range, Rich?
What do you mean range? He doesn't exist.
Wait, sorry, no, a range. Like, no, but it's a particular part of Canada.
Oh, I think there's myths everywhere. All around the world have big rural areas. I mean, Canada has huge masses of forest where you could make a case that, oh, if we... A corpse hasn't been found because they could be anywhere, or they go somewhere to die. Or there's all kinds of theories of how a Bigfoot could exist, but it could be in like northern Canada. It could be in America. They got them all around the world. Like there's Yowie in Australia. There's like I'm sure there's some in South America and Africa. Mm. And they're all over the shop, basically. Yeti in like Siberia or somewhere. So you know, you could tell any fucking story in the wilderness, any part of the world, so it doesn't even matter. Mm. I don't know. Like, why would you decide to make a film that kills Hitler and kills Bigfoot and not make it fun and awesome and action-packed? Like, occasionally it tried. It was exciting, it was tension-filled occasionally, but mostly it was concerned with sentimental bullshit and farting around, telling the story of an old man with regrets. And then he lived happily ever after, fishing with his brother. I went to see kids' plays. I mean, what, like, how is that the interesting bit? You can have some down moments where we don't... I'm not saying a movie has to be wall-to-wall action and thrills, but you set expectations, you bait people with a title like The Man Who Killed Hitler, and then The Bigfoot. And I felt like we got fucking shortchanged slightly.
I do feel like tricked is a strong word, but it is like, not that title... gives you expectations, and if you do not then meet those expectations, it's your fault because you called it that.
Yeah,
it's not like when you go into a movie and it's like, oh, this person's in it, so you thought it would be a certain way. Like, that was an authorial choice to call it The Man Who Killed Hitler and then Bigfoot.
I mean, the acting is pretty good. I will say Sam Elliott is very stoic, and he's fairly typecast. Not that he always kills Hitler, but that he is a slow-moving, thoughtful veteran. If you know, he's got all the things that people like about Sam Elliott are in this character. Mm. Like the young guy, you know, he's believable, I suppose. He doesn't have to do as much. His is more about actions, and his, I guess, his fecklessness is on point, like his little nervousy ways, and they work together. They both seem like the same character, but yeah, in terms of if we're heading towards a metaphor, we came out the gate saying how it was a bit disappointing or frustrating in ways. I think it's a bit like someone is selling you a celebrity house, and they're really, it's like an estate agent summing up of everything. It's like, oh, you know, this house used to belong to the man who shot Hitler, and then the Bigfoot, some say he saved the world, you know, and he used to live here, and you go, oh, fuck me, did he? Oh, wow. And it's like, but even like, even Hitler's special little house that he had built for him is really chintzy and shit. Like, I think if it was still existed and like you could go to it, you'd be like, oh my god, this was the furniture Hitler had, these little flowery sofas, and he plotted the domination of the world here and war and the executioner of Jews from this little fucking granny flat. Are you kidding? I mean, it was a nice, you know, the Birkhoff was nice, but like, it was, you know, it's that sort of, the film is very much like an estate agent trying to sell you a famous place that's awesome, and my god, like, it's worth a hell of a lot, because it's got this, it's got that, you know, oh, you won't believe it, and you go, oh, actually, you get there, and you go, oh, this is...
Well, that's the thing, it's like, it's not even necessarily a house, it's just, like, when someone's, like, this is like Jimi Hendrix's tooth, it's like, well, it's just a fucking tooth.
But it's sold to you like Jimi Hendrix's remains found, one tooth.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, it is, it's just a big old sell, it promises a lot. And then the reality is, you're sitting there, you've bought this house because it's the house that belonged to someone really famous. They did loads of cool shit. You're like, oh my god. And then you're like, oh, they're not very spacious or practical, or it's the kind of lame granddad house that, you know, I would rather not own. I could own a much better, cooler house that wasn't as, like, promising to be the house of the man that shot Hitler and Bigfoot. And so, to me, it's that the reality dawns on you slowly as you've moved in. That feeling of, oh, there's some nuts, some things are nice. Oh, yeah, I love the bathroom, really nice tiling. But just, the Wi-Fi's really shit, and the neighbours are annoying, and I don't know, it's kind of lame. I guess it's when people also visit, like, it happened a lot of places, celebrities' houses are like, oh, like Graceland, Elvis's house is supposed to be, though mad, like, because it's such a strange place, but small and kind of, oh, is that it? Kind of, you know. That's how I felt. It was that disappointment when you go, oh, it's just a house, isn't it?
Mm.
It wasn't the bunker, like, where a man shot Bigfoot from and defeated Hitler. It was his house where he lived. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, it is just a house after all. And that's how I felt, anyway, about this film. It was just a little film. It was, like, a lot of good points, but it promised more than that, so it kind of let me down.
Hmm. What is my metaphor today?
Ooh, didn't Calvin say when he was tracking Bigfoot, oh, his feet aren't that big, actually.
Yeah, that irritates me. There's one thing about Bigfoot, that he's big. That's
big
literally
feet.
The only thing we know about Bigfoot.
Big feet.
Big feet.
Sasquatch got big feet, isn't he? Like, but that's kind of the metaphor, isn't it? Oh, it's not as big as you thought. Oh. He's still a wild bloke. He's still the only one. But okay, yeah, they're not as big as all that.
Yeah, not as big.
Guess they could have called him zombie hairy bloke. Regular foot. Doesn't work, does it? Anyway, sorry, Abby.
I'm trying to think. It's like, yours was a good one. But I don't think that was quite my experience, where it's like, I've thought of something. I think it's a little bit harsh, but I can't think of a better one.
Go on.
You know the all-purpose gizmo from the bar show? Where it's,
I mean,
like,
this is obscure.
Yeah. Where it's part of... Okay. There was a mock Spanish channel as part of the bar show comedy show of the 1990s. And they had a running gag where there was an advert for this gizmo. It was exactly the same gizmo every time, but they would pretend that it was for a different thing. So sometimes it would be for the garden. Sometimes it would be for sex. Sometimes it would be for the kitchen. And I feel like the way that this film has cobbled together several things at once makes it, reminds me of that, because it doesn't actually execute on any of them satisfactorily. There's all the elements in there that suit the purposes of the individual thing that is, but it does not work as a whole to properly serve any of them.
So you've seen a kind of JML advert where you really go, this is the gadget you need in your life. It's got a cool fucking bit for killing Bigfoot. It's got another bit for slaying Hitler. It's got all the makings of a cool gadget you need in your life, and you've got to have it. And then you buy it and you go, oh, it's just a bunch of weird shit taped together and painted orange and sold to me on a promise and a lie.
Hmm.
Yeah,
but it does. That's a smidge harsh for how I react to this film, but it does give you an idea of my feeling.
But it's taped two interesting things together, and called it a unique thing. And it's gone, oh, look, this is a film, right? It's got this and it's got that, and you're gonna be fucking entertained. And you go, well, these components work and there's some good bits to it, but what the fuck, guys? This is a mess. Like, we don't need this. This is a joke. You kidding? Come on. It doesn't deliver. You're trying to do too many things. You're not a Swiss Army knife here, guys. Just get one thing right. It would be good enough. You know? I could have watched a film called The Man Who Killed Bigfoot, and I'd be like, oh, well, why did he kill Bigfoot? You know? That'd be interesting. How? Why? What's the story there? You know? Mm. Or a conspiracy theory about Hitler. But you don't jam the two together and then mainly deliver awkward dinner dates that go wrong and boring conversations at barbershops, guys. I don't want that. So yeah, a little disappointing, but still, you know, there's worse films. Definitely worse.
There are worse films.
It was, it's not a throwaway DVD. We were like, oh, I didn't love it, but if you throw it away, you won't be able to watch it again. And there's an element where you would watch it again. If only to complain anew. You know? But anyway, we did it, Abby. Just you and me. Shame we didn't share it with the guys, really. But it's awkward. You can't. America's so far away, Abby.
Can't
send
America.
The DVD there. Jamie can't have it. Anthony could have, maybe. Anyway, we did this one, just the two of us. And now we have to go on living forever despite coming to a natural end. The point is, we're finishing the podcast. Goodbye, Bigfoot out.
Bye. Oh, wait, no, have you did then?
Oh, dear, don't be happy, Hitler. That's no good.
Bigfoot don't talk.
Yeah, I apologise. You vomit, just vomit yourself goodbye.
Why?
Oh, you did. Charming.